Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.
Well, good morning and welcome to our first episode of 2024. I have on the line Nakia Porter. Hi, Nakia.
Hi, Miss Alpha. How are you doing?
I am fine. I'm just looking forward to our conversation today. Like I said, this is the first episode of the year and also the first listening session of our project, Creative Capital Region Creative Corps with Sojourner Truth African Heritage Museum. And a little bit about Creative Corps, we're focusing our social justice and on social justice and community engagement. And we are focusing also on tactical urbanism, art and placemaking. And so I'm really interested in talking to you today, or excited about talking to you today about just that. What is tactical urbanism, art, and placemaking? And we're going to explore that after you introduce yourself and talk to us about what it is you do.
Yes. Well, thank you again, Ms. Alpha, for setting up this space for us to really explore the opportunities that the Creative Corps Project is providing to us. And so first, I'm just so thankful to be one of the honored artists and cross-sector partners, which is with the Mellon and Day School Academy, and where I'm really focused on a collection of my dance, speaking, painting, community engagement through different activities, even including my technical background in computer science, and as a mother of three and a wife, how all of those pieces come together and allow me to use my voice to empower others through my faith, through my community, and my resilience that helps me to uplift the Pan-African peoples of the diaspora, focusing on healing the body and innovative solutions for overcoming trauma. And so all of these things, as we get to talk about it, they take my early childhood learning of loving to be a dancer, loving to talk with people, so much so that my teacher might have said I talk a little too much, but it's definitely come in as a way to be able to inspire and uplift people throughout the world.
Okay, that, is a really, really good introduction, about what it is you do. But what does Nakia Porter, who is Nakia? I met you a few years back when we came out of the pandemic, and you were with Jambalaya, and you were performing at a banana festival in Sacramento. And I said, who is Nakia Porter? I watched you out there performing with your group, and then I watched you with the young children, and I'm like, who is Nakia Porter? And tell me about you. I know you told us about this overarching, what you do, but what led you to do this work, and who are you?
So I am a bright light that shines and brings joy to everyone around. From a very, very young age, my mother and father poured that love and nurturing into me. My community, my extended family, from my aunts and uncles, grandmas, grandpas, they were always there making sure that I was protected, safe, and able to be that light and that joy. So for me, I helped to bring light and inspire others to find their internal light, no matter where they are, no matter how hard things are, and know that the Most High has given them amazing gifts And when you find that, it literally is like a shining light in the darkness of the world. And so with me and all that I do, it's always about focusing on how to uplift people. And again, I've gotten this feedback from aunts or cousins ever since I was a child. I would always try to look at situations and try to make out of them. And sometimes people are like, that can't be true. It's been the way I've come into this world. And so again, I'm a light that's here to inspire others to be the best versions of themselves possible by empowering them with my own experiences.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up, I was born in Washington, D.C., on the East Coast, and I've lived in multiple places of Maryland and Virginia. I went to school in Alexandria, Virginia, at T.C. Williams High School. That's Remember the Titans. A lot of people know that area as the DMV, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, very connected and very close. So that's where I spent my early childhood and high school years.
And your family, how many children? I know that you are a mother.
Yes. So I had two of my children, my husband and I, which were both A&T. We went to North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University. That's the HBCU, Historically Black College University in North Carolina, Greensboro, North Carolina, Aggie Pride. All right. And we met up and basically relocated further north near the Baltimore, Maryland area where I had my two children. My oldest now is 10. That's Liana, and my middle is Amara. She's currently 7. She'll be 8 soon. And then we relocated to California 2017 for new opportunities. I had worked in many different fields of technology, cybersecurity, information assurance, and moved for an opportunity, came out to Folsom, California, working at Intel, and that opportunity was amazing. And I say that to say we had our last child, Zoe, in California, so he's the only California baby. Those are all my bright, young homeschool children that I love so dearly.
Now, there it is. That's the Nikia that I was wanting to talk to today, you know. And so you're so well-rounded and so grounded, and, you know, and then, you know, and for you to be on this team of, you know, of creative artists, you know, coming back in with your social justice, you know, platforms, and how resilient you are with, you know, the Melanated Day School Academy. And could you tell us a little bit about that and how that came to be in Sacramento?
Yes, definitely. And so the work of the Academy, it really stems on the need for the community to have safe spaces to be, especially in the height of the pandemic. Earlier in the 2020 year, one of our elders asked me to work together to see if we could bring some in-person activity to help bridge the gap for our Black students that were having some technical difficulties with, you know, Zoom classes and other things like that. Before kicking that off the ground, I had a major life-changing experience. And this experience, I was a victim of police brutality. I was assaulted by law enforcement in August 6, 2020. And this was an experience that not only isolated me, but it isolated my whole family because we were impacted by an organization. You know, we talk about law enforcement that's supposed to be able to protect and serve. And here was an incident, like so many others, Breonna Taylor, you know, Stephon Clark, and their lives being taken. And to have experienced that firsthand for me was ground shaking. And so what I needed was my family. Like I said, I grew up on the East Coast, and majority of my family was still on the East Coast. So here we are, have experienced such a traumatic experience, and thank God that my father was there, that my brothers was there, you know, my husband there along with my children to help to put the pieces back together. And so what breathed life into the Melanin Day School Academy was this need, personally first, my own need to have a safe space to just be. And a lot of times, I think, you know, we went over the roles, you know, mom, wife, teacher, you know, educator, sister, daughter, you know, artist, technologist, all of these things, sometimes we can get lost in just being. And so with the creation of the Melanin Day School Academy, it was like, I need a family reunion every first and third Saturday to just be around people that are seeking to be in a loving and nurturing environment, who really want to build with each other versus tear each other down. We know we don't have time for that. And the experience that I had just really showed me what's more important. And so the Melanin Day School Academy was focused on creating that safe space. My sister and my mom came out the first day. It was October 3rd, 2020. And everyone just came out, and it was so beautiful. We had fresh live juice. We had fresh fruit. We had drumming, music, singing, and just a wonderful fellowship together with the community to just say, hey, we're here for each other. And this is even before anyone knew what had happened to me. And so this is the creation, this is the foundation of the Melanin Day School Academy. And it then branched off to then support other families for what they needed versus telling them what they needed, really listening, because I knew firsthand what it felt like to not be heard, to almost feel as though my life was no longer important because I was treated less than human. And if I
could be treated that way. I know that you want to really go into too deep because things are still in litigation, but I did do the research on you when I was putting together the Capital Region Creative Core grant application, and I was looking for artists like yourself that had actually, you know, and what your social justice platform was before inviting you in to do the project. And I did pull some articles out of the incident that happened, and just so a sense of place. You were coming back from the Bay Area, my understanding, and you were near the Davis, California area, and you were at a stop. You were pulled over so that you could trade places with your father. And so were you the driver and or the passenger? And then, you know, when you were getting ready to go to be the driver, that's when you a sheriff department pulled up, and then there was this altercation.
Just a clarification. I was already the driver, and people can go online for further details, but I was already the driver. I was switching seats with my dad because I was tired, which any person would do, right, to get home safely. So just to clarify there that, yeah, I was the driver and I was switching to become the passenger.
Right. And so, yeah, we don't want to kind of like go in, like you said, into that too deep on the radio. But again, that was just to put it in the proper in the proper context of, you know, things that happen and unfold along the you know, the highway or the freeway, depending on what part of the country you're in, and just something that, you know, natural, it's a natural thing to do when you're tired, you know, and you've got passengers in the car, you just pull over, and now you're in a situation where you were harassed, you know, and leading to, you know, arrest, and then to be able to have that voice, you know, when you came out of it, to really, you know, talk about that trauma, you know what I mean? And I think that sharing that with folks, because it's not where it's a rare occurrence, it's an occurrence that is happening too much here in not only here in California or in Illinois, but across the United States. It's just too much of a reoccurrence of our rights being violated. And so you were invited to come into this project because the basic need in this campaign is so that we focus on social justice and community engagement. And what the objectives of the Capital Region Creative Corps program is to create an economic workforce and development program demonstrating how artists from multiple disciplines can be instrumental in developing and implementing critical campaigns to address our most pressing community issues. And so, you know, even though you have a rich, diverse background in Pan-Africanism, and, you know, you're, you know, dance, you're running a dance company, you're running a school, you know, were selected to be part of this team because of the rawness of the things that have happened to you, and for you to continue to be that voice with the audiences and with when you're performing, and even within this project to be that voice when we're doing community engagement. You know, so we're going to move on, you know, to our investigation. And I want to ask you this question. And how can the community help you to restore environmental justice within our local communities? Is one of the questions on our investigation today.
Yeah, so, and this, all of this ties in, whether someone has had a very traumatic experience, it doesn't matter the level. Something when we talk about environmental justice, I want to just lay a foundation. When we talk about environmental, and anyone can do a Google search, all of this experience has helped me to know diving deeper and seeking knowledge helps provide clarity. So when we talk about environmental, we're talking about things relating to the natural world, the impact that human activity has on the condition. So I connect that to the body. When we treat our bodies well, our bodies can operate in such a great capacity. When we litter it, just like the environment, if we put things that are dangerous or harmful, it can pollute the environment. It can pollute our neighborhoods. And so it's important that our community starts to learn, first starting with themselves, because, you know, we say as above, so below, as within, so without, as the universe, so the soul, that these things are all connected. And so when we're able to take care of ourselves and put in the right things, we can better help take care of each other. We can better help take care of our environment. And that's what I would charge for people. Learn more about themselves. Take better care of themselves. Learn more about the environment in order to be able to take better care of it. And then connect with local organizations that are doing this work so that you can now not only talk about being a part of the change, but you can actually be a part of the change.
And then, you know, how will we rebuild our communities to be stronger and recreate sustainable living places? Is a follow-up question to that.
Yes, and so then again, as we talk about sustainable, right, this means that we're understanding how the choices that we make in our lifestyle will impact the world around us. So you can see that there's a theme. All of these things are connecting back to us being accountable for our actions and finding ways that everyone can live better together. And so I pose the questions of us asking, what values do we have? What principles do we have that we live by? What is the vision that we see for our community, right? And have those in reference to a sustainable living environment. And when we do that, charging everyone to really think about SMART goals. Are they specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and realistic? A realistic time base. This is SMART goals, so that we're not only thinking about things that we want or just dreaming, we now hold each other accountable to measure what we're trying to accomplish, looking at the results, the impacts, and set goals that the community can reflect on retrospectively to meet our current needs.
And then, you know, that is a really great response. And then if our, you know, listeners and people that are, you know, following you there in Sacramento and where you practice, you know, again, there in D.C., but if they could only just extract, you know, one word, you know, from that, you know, your position, what word would that be that you would want them to extract? I know you want them to extract the whole conversation, but we, as sometimes as individuals, you know, we only can bite something once and chew it and then, you know what I mean, and digest it. So what would that one word be?
That word for me would be perseverance. It's a word that my father had on a painting and a picture. He never, I don't ever recall him ever saying, you need to persevere. It was all subconsciously put in place, and I think that's helped me through all the experiences of my life to not give up, that there are going to be challenging moments in life, and through your faith, through your hope, through your community, like, it's so important to take one more step, to take one more breath, severe, with your eye on your prize, right? So that word for me and sharing for others is persevere.
Oh, all right. I agree. I agree so much because that's what we can do as a nation, you know, and when we find our tribe, that's what we do is persevere, you know, and move on to the next thing. Sometimes you don't have a chance to kind of, you know, you just, like you said, you're being, but you just want to just be. So, but then you got to persevere through that and get up and start that being again. So in what ways did you view yourself as an artist in our community, our community's challenge in building a strong, sustainable, and safe place?
So for me, and when we talk about art, art comes in multiple different forms and expressions, right? Some people can use their imagination or their creative skills with handwork, like my daughter does with her hands. But for me, my art came through speaking. I did speaking through Toastmasters, which aligns with telling our stories the way that we see them, seeing ourselves in those stories. That then led to me dancing to express myself, express emotions, right? I was a cheerleader, and I still am for this day for over 30-plus years, being able to bring joy and spirit. So before, you know, it was cheerleading, we were spirit leaders. We're out on the floor lifting your spirit up. So I've been doing that for a very, very, very long time. I really got to bring out my artistry work thanks to Shona, doing, you know, paintings of different orishas, and just having been in that creative, imaginative space. And also as a coder, as a computer scientist, I have the ability to create things that people can't see. And that visionary helps me to address different challenges that I've seen in our community. Right. So when we talk about the community challenges and how do we build a strong, sustainable, and safe place, first you have to know what the problem is. And so some of the problems and challenges that I've seen, experienced, or heard from our community is a lack of community support. Some families are unfamiliar with their environment, so they don't know how to reach out. They may have little to no blood relatives nearby, and since they may do everything on their own, they're not used to reaching out. So they're unable to connect. They're unable to unite with others because they're focusing on the differences. And so this is where I want people to really start to work on establishing trust. We know, right, Ms. Alpha, we know with relationships is so important to build trust, right? And so being able to do that has us become more reliable It has us operating in truth. It has us building our abilities to strengthen each other so that we can empower each other, you know, inspire each other. And once we can see ourselves in each other, right, then we can truly begin to build more sustainable spaces, because now we're not only building it for ourselves, but we are indeed building it for our families, all of our loved ones, our friends, and our community as a whole.
Right. And when you say community, you know, the Sojourner Truth African Heritage Museum is one of the, well, the first and only African Heritage Museum in Sacramento, in that region. And Shawn McDaniels, which is the executive director, and she is an activist, and as well as an artist and muralist, and art educator. And, you know, we give ourselves all these accolades and titles, but at the end of the day, we're grounded in our, you know, activism, again, in what we do to create these safe spaces. And the museum and the Melody Day School Academy is located in South Sacramento at the Florin Square building, which is at 24th and Florin. And February 10th and 11th is our second community engagement activity with the Creative Region, the Capital Region Creative Corps. And why we're having these listening sessions, you know, during this grant time. And tell me, what are you and the Melody Day School Academy doing during the Black History Heritage Festival that the museum is authoring?
So it's so awesome because I have an opportunity to partner with, you know, many other organizations in Sacramento, but then also across the nation. So I have Mia Davis, who is our agricultural warrior, right? And she will really be sharing with the community ways that they can start to connect more with nature, right? That is one of the things that we're not only telling people to do, but actually giving them hands-on steps, guides, and hands-on workshops for composting, starting your garden, and, you know, seed gathering, collecting, and saving, and the importance of taking care of the soil, right? And how, if you don't do that for yourself personally, how can we expect to do that for nature? And one of our proposals that's partnering with AgriHood 2020, and this is the Sankofa AgriHood 2020 project with Ms. Roz Myers, a.k.a. Queen Amina, for Blacks in Agriculture. So it's very important as we're gardening, we're doing things that we use the principles of Sankofa to go back and learn about those that have been doing such amazing, great work. And we will be showcasing some of those unknown leaders and Black agricultural agriculturalists. A lot of people will know some names. They may know of George Washington Carver, but they may not know some of the others. So we will be exploring those with a story walk and diving a little bit deeper into some of those unknown, how they've helped us to get to where we are now, some of the local farmers that are doing this work, and inspire others to start growing as well. So the collective project that we will be doing together will be focused on Blacks in agriculture on multiple parts so the community can continue to go.
By contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life, these installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Nakia, for joining us on another listening session on Creative Conversation.
Pleasure. Thank you so much, Ms. Alpha.